Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we had a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we did. Like, we both had busy viewing weeks. And we were, for the first time, we were on track with each other with what we've seen. So we're having a full body discussion.
You finish King of the Hill? I meant to ask you.
No, I did not. Because
that's the one thing I did get to finish.
Oh, so, okay.
I was having such a good time watching it that anytime I could sit down to watch anything, I was like, I just want to watch King of the Hill.
So, okay.
Emotional when you get to the end. Very emotional.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, so, we will definitely have to discuss it then. Because I have not seen it, not yet at least. So, I've been busy with other stuff. We will definitely get into it. I'm just really slow rolling it with that one because I don't know when we're going to get another
I know there's series. Another batch, but I probably next year.
Yeah.
So there's at least 10 more coming, maybe 20 more. So
I just want to slow roll it to enjoy it because those first two episodes were really great. Let's get into Alien Earth because that's a series that's also on FX Hulu. But it's not being dumped.
It's going Disney FX Hulu.
Yeah. Okay. So like, let's have that discussion right now. Like, isn't it weird to you that we're going to be like the Europeans where everything's on Disney Plus? So it's no longer going to be a Hulu it's not going to be a Hulu thing. It's going to be an FX Disney Plus thing because starting in 2026,
it sounds weird.
it really does. Like, Disney having R-rated content is already weird enough as it is, because, like, you know, I think it's also, like, just an age difference. Like, we come from an era where Disney was a family brand, not a family entertainment thing, like a conglomerate that didn't care about ratings. Like, they did it, like, they were so much concerned about ratings, they created a whole entire studio so that they didn't make PG-13 and rated R movies.
Yeah. And now, if you have the parental thing off, you're just watching rated R content, and right before it starts, you're just like, you get that little Disney Plus thing. And it's weird to the, like, the, I'm an old man and I'm just like, Disney doesn't have stuff like this.
Yeah,
but you know, it is what it is. It's weird that I guess we've all kind of come around to, like, I just want all my stuff in the same place.
Yep.
Like, and I know what that led to. It led to what we have now to begin with, but it's become such a hassle to just figure out what I'm subscribed to. Is this available? Like, there's so much stuff that I see trailers for this stuff on other streaming services like Hulu, and it's like only on AMC Plus. And I'm like, but I'm not paying for AMC Plus. Like, I'm not gonna. So, unless you make it really, really worth my while. If I can give you $25 and you give me a year of AMC Plus, okay. Because I will just give you $25, watch the one thing I want to watch, and then probably forget that I have it. So, but outside of that, I'm just, like, I'm so close to just canceling almost everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I talked to you about what I do, which is I cancel and then resubscribe when there's something that I want to watch. Like, so, like, and that, it seems to be a much easier way to approach things.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more work, yes, but, like, Apple makes it pretty easy with a cancellation button.
Yeah.
So, like, go ahead.
That's the one thing about Apple that I've found, like, in the past with almost anything, like, from, like, things just, like, subscription-based apps, dating yep. services, or games, or whatever, that you go into, just on your phone, you can go in, see what you're subscribed to, and cancel that subscription. They yep. do make it extremely easy. And unfortunately, I'm not subscribed to everything through Apple. Otherwise, I probably okay. would do that. I should do that, but I came to subscribe to different things in different ways. So some stuff I'm actually subscribed through Apple. Some stuff, like my Hulu is connected to my Spotify because I had mm-hmm. a bundle subscription. A couple of things are connected to Prime, so they get charged to my Amazon account. And then something I subscribed through PayPal, weirdly, oh, wow. for some reason, and it bills through my PayPal account.
Okay.
Because I got it like if you use PayPal and you go to the website, they'll have like a thing at the bottom. Like I think a lot of apps do now.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you get this deal through us right now. And like Netflix used to be through my phone because I got it through T-Mobile. Which is no longer the case.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I didn't do it right. I just kept, like, adding stuff through different other services. And so now it's like I just got to log into all my accounts and just cancel things.
Oh, man. That is not, yeah, like, I can understand why it's inconvenient for you to do that. But, like, right now, I think I'm only running on two services. I have Disney Plus, which I don't count Disney Plus because it's a yearly subscription.
Yeah. And it's easy to dismiss it because,
yeah,
like, oh, well, I paid for the year.
Exactly. And I usually get an Apple gift card around the time that, because it's around the time my birthday is. So like my dad gives me like a $200 gift card. So I just re-up it I turn the Apple gift card into cash and I just put it into to the subscription. So that's the only one that I don't really pay for. But like right now it's literally Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime. Because I went, because it was cheaper for me to go like a month to month with Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Because it was like, I was paying way too much money for Amazon Prime. I just like, I'm really fucking tired of you guys. Just because like the ads and stuff, if I'm going to have ads, I'm going to pay the cheapest amount for this shit. So anywho, that's what I did. So like I don't have Paramount Plus, a whole bunch of other things. I probably will start like adding things in on the fly to watch things.
I need to cancel Paramount. I really do.
Yeah.
Like I keep saying I'm going to especially after the merger and the, like, I don't know. Was it this past week that they announced that, like, I forget the guy's name, but he's going to oversee South Park. And I'm like, okay, good luck overseeing those guys.
Yeah.
They're just going to push back.
They're going to go harder, and their contract stipulates that they don't have any oversight. Like that's the funniest part, yeah. is that they don't have like. There's like I think that like David Ellison is a moron, and he really should read his contract because the contract that they got is literally like we reproduce the episodes, we control the content. If you do not air them. That's fine. They revert right back to us and we can air them any way we want to. And plus you still have to pay us.
Yeah.
So, like, they literally have...
They're going to destroy the system.
Yes, and I'm glad for it. I'm glad for it. And the best part is, you know that they own their... Like, you remember earlier in the summer how I was talking to you about how much I want to see their Lamar... Kendrick Lamar movie, comedy? I didn't realize that part of the deal was their ownership, like their complete ownership of that, and it's just distributed through Paramount if they want it to be distributed through Paramount. Because they knew that Paramount, through this merger, was going to probably try to bury it, which they've already tried to do, because it went from summer, it was supposed to be released at the same slot that the Naked Gun was. Like, here's the crazy part. Naked Gun wasn't supposed to come out until next year. For some reason, I don't know why, but it was supposed to be next year. It was probably to hype it. And we're going to talk about that movie. And they swapped dates for the movies. And everybody thought it was to bury it. But the whole thing is that they can't bury it, because all that Trey and Matt are going to do is take it away from them. And like, who knows what they'll do to it. Like, I love those dudes. I watch South Park by certain means. I'm not going to say how I watch it, but I have been watching it again. And I'm going to tell you, it is the funniest that show has been in 15 years. Like, literally. And it's because they're charged. They're electrified by everything that's happening. And it's savage. It's savage. But anywho.
Back to Alien Earth.
Yeah.
So you watched both episodes.
Yes, I did.
I only got to watch the first episode, so I guess we're going to avoid some real spoilery stuff. I don't know how much further the second episode goes than the first episode.
Why don't we have a discussion, like an overall discussion of this show? We talked like very briefly. We texted very briefly about this show. And I didn't say anything about it because I had not seen it, and I just watched it last night. So like, I watched it early in the evening so that I had time to process it. The film that I instantly rewatched, the thing that it made me want to rewatch, and the thing that I actually did watch, was Alien Resurrection, because it's the film that I least watched. And then also, additionally, I watched part of Blade Runner 2049.
Those worlds are colliding the further we go, the more it's like, oh, Blade Runner is definitely in the Alien universe, right?
Yeah, and I'm fucking sick of it, dude. So my overall thoughts is I'm sitting and waiting. After two episodes, I'm sitting and waiting. Because on one side, it's this weird balance of like, I loved what Feige did. I hate what Ridley does. And this feels like Noah fucking Hawley, like I told you I was weary of Noah fucking Hawley with his fucking bullshit. And Ridley Scott, as soon as I saw, like, Ridley Scott was, like, super producer on this, it wasn't like in Alien Romulus where all of a sudden, like at the last minute, they were like, oh, but Ridley was involved with it because stylistically it's kind of like Alien, but it's like a real Alien film. This, from the get-go, it's like, from producers, da-da-da-da.
Feel more in line with Prometheus and Covenant than it does with the Alien films, and that's just me off one episode.
Yeah,
mainly because it's called Alien Earth, and I do appreciate the build up to the horror of it all and the creatures, but they're instantly just talk, like, not even showing, it's just words on the screen, and it's about the androids or the synthetics or the three classes, cyborgs, like whatever you want to call them, Like, it's just about that. And it is an interesting concept, but it's the thing that derailed Ridley Scott's return to this franchise, because it started out as exploring the ancient gods, you know, like the space jockeys. Like, we were going to learn about that and their relationship to the aliens. And they jettisoned the most interesting parts of that, and he fell headfirst into, oh, what's David's thing? Like, what is all this about? And, like, it's vaguely interesting, but for me, it's always been the least interesting part of Alien. Like, I get why they're there. I get the semi-fascination of, like, how did this happen? Like, but they're just corporate spies. That's all they were. And you've turned it into, like, the, I don't know, this weird man's search for immortality thing. And yes, in real life, like, that's where that's going to come from. But it's fucking, it's, I don't know. It's not what I want in my alien stuff. Nope. Like, a little bit, but it's, it's too much chocolate with the peanut butter, I guess. Or peanut. Yeah. I don't want to say too much peanut butter with the chocolate, because I fucking love peanut butter, but it's too much chocolate with the peanut butter. You know, so it's kind of disheartening to know that even by the second episode, we haven't gotten a little more into the, like, alien of it all. We've got, what, 10 episodes?
And, okay, so, like, and to be said, we do, but it's Noah Hawley on his shit, and I'm sick of, like, this fucking dude. Like, I'm tired of quirky, like, okay, I'm gonna go off on a tangent for just 2 seconds. I'm fucking sick and tired of the quirky showrunner that doesn't give us what we want. I want dudes like Fede Alvarez. I'm sick of it. I want the second episode kind of gives us, like, it definitely gives us alien action. Okay? It does, but, and it gets, like, it's one of those things where I'm like, because I know Noah Hawley, I know that this shit is going to go sideways very quickly. He's going to give us certain things, but he's not going to give us the things that we want, because he's not like that. Because, okay, like, just as an example, like, the series, the TV show, the episodes always end with a rock song, right? And it's so disproportionate to what Alien is that I'm like, who the fuck does this?
Yeah, it's a little weird to have that, like, modern music with here's a few things I did appreciate from the first episode. Like, even though he's directly just, like, it's a little too, like, hey, remember the first Alien movie? I do like the feel of that.
No, like, absolutely.
It's a little too on the nose at some point. Like, down to, like, the dirty kind of janitor type guys,
yeah,
you know, that they look down on. They're like, well, y'all, you're not really part of the crew or something, but you have, like, the black dude with the headband, and it's, like, a little too on the nose. But I did appreciate that he made the effort to, like, this ship looks like the Nostromo. Like, the tech is the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a prequel that somehow everything looks better than it did in the first movie. Kind of like Prometheus, where it's like,
yeah.
this tech is better than what you had in the first movie. It doesn't make a lot of sense as a prequel. So I did appreciate that. I think he's really, really good with the suspense stuff. Like, the first movie, the first Alien doesn't, until you get to the end, it doesn't play with the, like, the shadows of everything. You know, like, is that an alien in the fucking corner? Or, yeah. like, or, you know what I mean? Like, suddenly you've been looking at something and not knowing what it is, and then something moves, and you're like, oh, shit. Like, there's a few of those things in the first episode that I really, really appreciate. I think they make really good use of the score from the original film. That's nice to try to kind of invoke that feeling. I like the way he shows you how the crew dies, and like they're sitting there talking, and then it'll just cut to them dying.
Yeah.
And then go back to them talking, and it just keeps jumping in time rather than have it play out in a linear fashion. I thought that was an interesting way to do that. You save a little bit of time. You don't have that build up, but it is, I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting way to convey that story, you know? And like I said, save a little bit of time. But the Neverland stuff, I don't know. I am interested in the whole, these are children in adult bodies. That sounds weird. But the concept of like, you have to use kids to transfer into these synthetic bodies, because an adult mind isn't malleable enough to handle that. And so that this, you know, Elon Musk-esque figure is using them as test dummies, right?
Yeah.
Because that's his ultimate goal, is for him to be able to make the transfer. But until they can figure out how to do it with an adult, he's just using these terminally ill kids as his test cases. And now he's using them, well, maybe unknowingly using them as kind of cannon fodder. I mean, I guess they could die. They can't really be hurt. But yeah, he doesn't know what he's sending them in there to get the tech, right? Because
yeah, well, okay. So what ends up happening? It does evolve in a very kind of linear, like you would think that A plus B equals C. It does create some pretty interesting things, but at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, it's literally just like, oh, okay, well, there's a reason why they want to go, or somebody wants to go, and it's very obvious what, like, if you really think about the first episode, you like kind of watch and go, oh, okay. And there's a reason why these both have been released at the same time, because together they make a really big 2-hour pilot. Like, that's basically what it is.
I hate that we didn't get to the, because me and Steph watched it together. We just didn't get to the second episode. We ran out of time. We were we went to Atlanta to a concert yesterday, so we just, you know, both working nights, we got up, did our daily thing, and then took off to Atlanta.
No, didn't absolutely. Get back
till like 2 a.m. Ooh. So, yeah, it was fun though. So yeah, we just couldn't get in the second episode. I'm not hating it. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. Like, the money is on the damn screen. There is one question that I really want the show to answer, and I don't think it will, because it's a minor thing. And they quickly get away from it, even in the first episode. But ooh, it bugged me. how in the hell is she watching her brother like he's a TV show? How?
They answer that. They answer that in the next episode. Okay. They definitely answer that in the next episode. It is
actually a point of contention. Is everything just reality shows now? Like, everybody's the star of their own reality show? They don't even know it? Like,
No. What? There's specific reasons. Like, the one thing I can say about this film, this show, is, like Ridley Scott, it is very ABC practical. Like, you know how, like, Ridley loves to give you an explanation? If he gives you a question, he'll give you the answer. And you may not like, and that's part of the thing that I don't like, is that Ridley has become this mathematician of a film, of a storyteller, where everything has to be explained, and everything is explained in this show. So, like, but it's done.
That was the thing about the first Alien movie, right? Is there's nothing, like, there is an explanation for it, and it's off screen. You don't get to know. Like, we've uncovered it over time, but you have to, like, it's kind of like Donnie Darko is that similar. Like, you watch it and, like, yes, the people that made it, the people that wrote it, directed it, they have an explanation, but it's not in the movie.
Yeah.
So you're left going, like, the first Alien movie, most of my life was spent, because I love Alien, but I'd watch it growing up and be like, yeah, okay, the alien, but they landed on this planet and there is a giant fucking thing. What is that? What is that?
Exactly.
And unfortunately, you know, decades later, you kind of sort of get the explanation, and they half-heartedly do it, and it's fucking disappointing, man. I hope this show doesn't fall down that path.
It's very much like, you know, it's the General Kenobi, you served my father in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And like, you know,
the Clone Wars, and it's like, that's it. Now, the TV show gives you a lot more, but in the movies, you are like, wait, what?
Exactly. But it's like, it's very mathematical. Like, the combination of Ridley Scott and Noah Hawley, I feel like I'm taking a step back from my inclination of going, no, this is the worst fucking idea in the world. I'm taking a step back from it, because there are glimmers of things that happen in episode 2 that are wonderfully horrific, wonderfully weird and strange and kooky. But it's framed in a very kind of, like, very Ridley type of story, if that makes sense. Like, we're already getting the shape. Like, by the end of episode 2, you get the shape of what they're trying to do.
I think the kids in the synthetic bodies, that could be really, really interesting, because, and all of those people are playing it wonderfully. Like, I imagine the direction is just, go in there and act like you're 12.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed all that. I don't know that I enjoyed it as part of an alien thing. But I did enjoy it. I think, I don't know the actress who's playing Wendy, but I think she's doing a great job. The movie does have a weird fascination, or the movie, the show does seem to have a weird fascination with both Peter Pan and Ice Age 4. So I don't even think I've seen Ice Age 4, so I don't know what Peter Pan, I kind of understand. Well,
it's the pirates. So. It's the pirate thing, because like Ice Age 4, it deals with pirates. Like, it's a very wild ass movie that deals with, like, animals as pirates. And so, like, it's the whole thing of, like, the translation of, like, Neverland and pirates and the Lost Boys and all of that stuff. Like, it's not like, okay, so like, again, like, okay, so like, I know that it sounds like I'm really shitting on this, and partially I am, but there's stuff in the second episode that's so good, but also additionally, it's not enough. Like, it's like the Timothy Olyphant character I was excited about until I found out what he was. And then he has a speech that is prototypical of those kinds of characters in that movie.
So, I guess kind of, sort of spoilers, and you can answer as vaguely as you want. But it's not established in the first episode, but I've seen enough going in that he's what Ash was. He's what Bishop was, right?
Like, by the first episode, the end of the first episode, you kind of figure that because of his reactions and the way that he talks.
It felt weird that they were kind of sort of keeping it a mystery. Like,
yeah, which,
because Steph asked me, like, what's his deal? I was like, oh, he's like an android, like Ash and Bishop from the original films. Like,
yeah.
But they never establish it, and it feels like it's supposed to be a reveal at some point, but I'm like, but this was all like, Timothy Olyphant has talked about this. Like,
yeah,
I've seen him talk about this, like why he has the stark white hair and the bleached eyebrows, and like how much it unnerved his wife to see him with the hair like that. I've read those interviews, so it feels weird that the show was kind of not just being like,
just out of
Well,
like, even like in the second episode, it's very like, they don't make a big deal about it, but they definitely like at a certain point you go, oh yeah, he's like, but I already knew this because of just the way he was acting. Why are you doing it this way? Why not just kind of say it up front so that there's not any kind of misdirect about it?
Offhandedly, like,
yeah,
you know, somebody making a derogatory comment about him being not real, you know,
yeah.
it just, Klanka. Yeah, that felt like a weird, weird thing to not just be upfront about. I'm like, I don't understand if this, because it's definitely not supposed to be a secret because it's been talked about, but, yeah, I'm not in love with the show, but I'm also, I throw Noah Hawley a lot more leniency than you do, for sure. Maybe because I don't watch Fargo. So, yeah. And I know we've talked about this. Like, I know the dude from two shows.
Yeah.
He had a show called The Unusuals. I know I've talked about before. You can't fucking find anywhere. It was a cop show. It was fucking great. Like, if you can, you know, through nefarious means, find the 10 episodes of The Unusuals that were made, find it and get it. It's fucking worth watching. And then Legion, which was a show Ryan and I podcasted about. I loved Legion. Fucking absolutely bizarre.
Legion is his best work. Like, by far and away, and it's probably some of the, like, it'll go down, like, I will give it credit as going down as one of the best pieces of superhero filmmaking ever. Ever. Because it's so good. Like, that's how good that is. And it ends perfectly. Like, it ends the way that it needs to end. Like, from the opening moment to the closing image, that show is an amazing piece of work, and I would never take away anything from that.
I'm hoping that this comes back around, and I kind of just wind up being like, oh, okay. So like where we started, I'm in it, but I'm not in love with it. Much like Prometheus and Alien Covenant, it's a little too navel gazing from the jump. But maybe by the time we get to the end, I'll be like, oh, okay, well, no, I'm in it. This is great. So, we'll see. We got you know, 8 more weeks of this, I think. So
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will definitely see. Like I said, like, I'm cautiously optimistic, especially after the second episode. And I will tell you, the second episode definitely shows you they put a big budget behind it. They put a big budget behind it.
I mean, the fucking... let's talk about the space crash for a minute.
And yeah.
I mean, we're watching it, right? And I looked at Steph and I was like, he has to know. I know it's been over 20 years, but he has to know what he's invoking here, right?
Oh, he absolutely does. They absolutely do because they... Okay, so like... I cannot remember because they bleed it into one another, but they call the team that goes in, the teams that go in, first responders.
Yeah,
he's like, they say, like, we're first, like, you know, like the teams of first responders
and search and rescue. Yeah, first responders, search and rescue. It's wild to me how, and I understand there's not a lot of ways to do that, you know, but when you have this ship crashing into a building and then you follow people going into the rubble and you have these people like coming out and pieces of the building are falling on them. It's like, you know what you're invoking. And 9/11 is the first thing you think of, but like, also, if you're old enough, like the Oklahoma City bombing, there's so much stuff that you're invoking there. And at least the first episode doesn't pay off that emotional reaction that you have if you were, you know, living through those things and saw the news and heard the stories. It doesn't pay that off in the first episode. I know it's just the first episode, but it does look pretty spectacular. Like, it does not look like a TV budget when that ship crashes. So, I do think that the kid from Andor is pretty good here. I know I hadn't seen him do much in the first episode, and I guess we'll probably get more of his story, but he definitely feels out of place among everybody else. Like, he's just not on the same level as them.
Yeah, and I think that's the point, especially in the second episode. You'll see. The standout, though, is Babu Kusei. Who I literally fucking thought was David Oyelowo for like a good portion of the fucking show. And then I was like, where's David Oyelowo? Why aren't they crediting him? And then I was like, oh, it's this kid, Babio, Cisse, I think it is. He is like the best part of both episodes. Like, for me, him and Sydney Chandler as Wendy are the best parts.
I didn't know that she was Kyle Chandler's daughter. Like,
a nepo baby. But like,
once you know, it's just like, oh shit, yeah, she's definitely Kyle Chandler's daughter.
Yeah, you can't unsee it, right? Like, you're like, oh yeah, this is totally Kyle Chandler's daughter. It's not a bad thing. It's just, it's like, It's wild that so many of these like nepo babies, and I don't care, I'll call them a nepo baby, are like coming to prominence and they're that good. But then again, you know what? When your dad is Kyle Chandler and you can do whatever the fuck you want, you can spend 10 years of your life just studying acting to get good, right? And then those genes are probably not a recessive gene, but a dominant gene. So, you know, it comes out to be like, you know, we're just in a good run. Like, every other, it seems like every other generation has a good run of nepo babies.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, think about it. Like, the generation that Kurt Russell came from, I mean, Kurt Russell's a nepo baby. Like, but his generation of nepo babies, man, were they good. And then the generation after that, not so good. Because, I mean, you know, that's still in the generation of, like, Robert Downey Jr., right? Like, so, like, that level, I mean, I know that for people, like, Robert Downey Jr. isn't that old, but he's just been around since the 1980s for us. Like, you know, I mean, we don't remember him as, he's not I Am Iron Man. He's the fucking little weirdo from Back to School and fucking A Weird Science, right? Yeah. Like, that's what the thing that's always wild to me is that my dad always says, he's the fucking weirdo. He's the weirdo that Rodney Dangerfield said was the poster child for birth control in fucking Back to School. And like, and now he's like the biggest thing in the world. I mean, it would just be like the equivalent of, like, I don't even know who that's the equivalent of. But anyways, it's all to say that, like, it's a wait and see kind of thing. And it's especially weird to me that they're going so hard on the Android thing when we have a Blade Runner show coming out in like a few months from Ridley Scott, starring Michelle Yeoh as an android. You know, Blade Runner 2099. So it's like, man, he's not even doubling down; he's tripling down on this shit. Yeah. Like it's just, it's wild to me, and I'm open to it. It's just, come on, man. Synthetic shit is not all that interesting. Like, it really isn't. Like, you can only do so, like, you've already traversed two fucking films, two $300 million films.
Well, we've got two Blade Runner movies. We've got the Alien Covenant and Prometheus that deal with it, and you know, you get into it a little bit with the Alien franchise before that, not too much, but no. A little bit. It's a little, I don't know. We'll see. If nothing else, hey, we still got the Predator franchise this year.
Yes, so. Yes, we do, which is also part of the Alien franchise.
I mean, yeah, but we're not going to be dealing with cyborgs and the yes, cyborg thing is well yeah I guess we are,
we are.
the cyborg thing is a new twist. We haven't seen the having the capability to like morph into something, which feels like it's getting in also into Terminator territory.
Yes.
So is Alien Predator Terminator in our future? Because
I don't think that Paramount is gonna, like, especially after the merger acquisition, are gonna let go of that IP. So, yeah. They're already I feel like Trachtenberg is gunning for the merger. Like, he's already started it, right? Like, that's gonna eventually be, but I feel he's gonna do it better than what they did before. Because I mean, that's such a low hanging fruit, anyways. Like, the bar is so low, like. He's already kind of gotten it to the point.
It would be hard not to be better than those Alien Predator films, which I maintain the second one is a better movie than the first one. But
yeah.
The first one, I think the story is probably a little bit better in the first one. But the second one, just they're like, well, we fucked up. We're going to make this R-rated because who wants an Alien or Predator film that's PG-13.
Nobody. Like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Like that's always my thing is like, why the fuck did you do that? That's the stupidest fucking thing in the world.
Okay. So let's change lanes here for a second. I said, well, I remember I was going to ask you. Did you see, there's yet another fuck you to David Zaslav that happened, like, maybe just yesterday, day before yesterday? I don't know when Tubi did it, but Tubi acquired basically the entire Looney Tunes library.
Yes, I did see that, which is fucking wild. Which is wild to me. Like, but then again, you know what? I'll be honest with you. Do you know how, like, since I've stopped streaming, like since I stopped my streaming services and I go with like there's a big component of free stuff. Do you know how much I watch Tubi? Tubi's like 30% of my intake. Like
if they could get their interface just a little bit better. Just a little bit better. It's better than a few of the paid services for sure. Like I think it's better than Amazon's. But if it could be just a little bit better, then Tubi would be fucking amazing.
Okay, so like let me just tell you the movies that I've got like, you know, in Tubi right now. Straight Outta Compton, La Bamba, Footloose, both of the Footlooses. Don't Be a Menace While Drinking Your Juice in South Central, Girl Interrupted, Saving Private Ryan, The Devil's Advocate, Queen and Slim, Gridiron Gang, Coyote Ugly, Stand By Me, Robots, Blast from the Past, Waterworld, Evolution, The Original Omen, all of the Lethal Weapon films. Let me see what else. Meg 2, all of the Steven Seagal movies you could ever want. Encino Man. Like, these are Steel Magnolias, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, Twins, Adventures in Babysitting, Mighty Joe Young, Real Genius. Shaft, all of the Shafts, Short Circuit, Wayne's World, Captain Ron, like all of the things that I would want to watch, like 80s and 90s movies that like no service wants, they have. I mean, shit, they have, like, you know what I watched last night, falling asleep to last night? Little Big League, dude.
Okay. First of all, I have a fun Kevin Bacon story.
Okay.
But before I get to that, I think this is an abomination. But I think Little Big League might be the best baseball movie ever made that isn't for love of the game.
I can see it. That's a medium hot take, but I can see it. Because I love
that movie. Does not get enough. Like, it was in that, like, kid joins the major league thing era, of, like, Angels in the Outfield and Rookie of the Year, which I think is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Angels in the Outfield is okay, but it's kind of, like, just sentimental, like, bleh. But, and a Little Big League gets into that territory because, you know, kid's grandfather dies, but if you watch that movie, it's about baseball.
Well, it understands, like, baseball the way that
it's, like, not kitschy. It's not like some fucking like thing that comes in, you know, like the Rookie of the Year is the kids playing baseball. This is it's not realistic because I don't think a kid can inherit a baseball team. I don't like, logistically, people would fight him for that. And that kind of, the movie kind of gets into that.
Yeah.
But it's about baseball. Like, for love of the game, it's about baseball.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's straight up, like, baseball. Like, and it understands baseball. Like, it's written by somebody who could have been, like it feels like it's written by, and this is what I love about it, is that it's a movie that understands baseball in the way that somebody that played baseball and that's been in baseball knows baseball. Like, that sounds weird because it's a lot of baseball there, but that's what it is. It's kind of like the same way that, like, my favorite baseball movie is Bull Durham. Like, that's just, like, it takes two of my favorite things, sports and sex, and it mixes them together in a real way, even though it's not about baseball, but it is. And also, like, as I get older, I start to appreciate the whole thing of, like, Crash Davis is only 32 years old and he's a burnout. Like, I really do appreciate that because we've kind of come to the world where people in their late 30s, early 40s are just kind of, like, scrubbed to the side. Like, we no longer matter.
I also kind of feel that. Like,
yeah.
I also, like, I realized that I still had a lot of potential at that age. I'm a little bit older than, mid to late 30s, but I'm 46 now. But at the time, it did feel like I was also completely burned out. And now at 46, I'm just like, burnout's not even the word anymore. But yeah, Little Big League, have not watched it in, 10, 15 years at least. But I love that movie so much. And one of my favorite baseball trivia bits right now is that, an actress named Ashley Crowe plays his mom in that movie. There is a man who plays for the Cubs named Pete Crowe Armstrong, star player for the Cubs. That's his mother.
I did not know that. That's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah.
The movie's about fucking baseball.
Yeah.
And like, it's in the movie. The movie is still like giving a shit this many years later. It's still there, you know? And yeah, I've got to, it's on Tubi. I've got to sit down and fucking watch it.
Oh, you do, dude. Like, and I forgot the murderer's row of people that
it's
actually
so show. Much talent, man. There's so many fucking good people in that movie.
Dude, just John Astin being John Astin and Timothy Busfield being the grizzled first baseman. Like,
he's so good, man.
Oh my God, dude. And then Jonathan Silverman, their relationships, it's
Jason Robards. It might be the last truly great Jason Robards performance. I mean, he's in the movie for maybe 10 minutes, but holy shit, man. He's so fucking good. Kevin Dunn.
But then you also have fucking a Dennis Farina shows up. Yep. But then you also have this was a movie that the MLB got behind because you got Ken Griffey Jr., Lou Piniella, Yvonne Rodriguez, Sandy Alomar Jr., Alex Fernandez, Randy Johnson shows up in this motherfucker, dude. I was so delighted because it had been about 10 years or 15 years since I'd seen this movie. And I was like, you know what? It's on fucking Tubi. I'm going to bed. I need a sports movie because I've been on a sports movie kick. Going to bed, watching sports movies, because it's kind of great. Right. And I was getting tired of watching Necessary Roughness and the Replacements. So I was like, you know what? I need a baseball movie. And so Little Big League was on Tubi and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give this one cause I've always liked it. It was my favorite of the kids doing baseball movie. It's one of those movies that you just kind of go, yeah, this is great. Yeah, this is great.
Back and watch it again, man. It was just so dismissed as we're kind of done with that genre. And here's what sucks. I know we've gone off on a tangent on Little Big League, but so the director, Andrew Scheinman, noted fucking producer. So many excellent movies that he produced, and he was also a producer on Seinfeld. Worked with Rob Reiner on so many fucking so many things. Stand By Me, Prince. He produced all of Rob Reiner's movies.
Yep. Well, you know why the movie didn't do well, right? Do you know what year?
Assume it was 94.
Yeah. So, you know what happened, right? You know what movie it was released at the same, literally a month after it was released. It was released a month before, but the writing was already on the wall and the blood was in the water because of a terrible test screening. So they withdrew their funding, their support, Warner Brothers did, because North, they spent
That was not a good outing for Reiner, Castle Rock, and Warner Brothers.
No.
So, Okay, well, that kind of makes sense. But this is the one fucking movie this dude directed.
Yeah.
The one movie he directed. And it just didn't go anywhere for him, unfortunately. Because I think it's solid. Like, I know I haven't watched it in a long time, but you just rewatched it. It's fucking good, man. So
it really is.
Tubi's free. Baseball, like, for a lot of people, baseball's almost over because most of our teams are not making it to the fucking playoffs. Yeah. It is such a mid-year for baseball. Yeah, go watch a good baseball movie, and this one is one of the fucking best. Like, I get why everybody loves Bull Durham. It's not my thing. Like, it's good. I like it. Not my thing. My top two, probably, For Love of the Game, number one, Little Big League, number two. I say that having not seen Little Big League in a very long time, but there's just shit in that movie that sticks with you, man. Like, that, the whole idea of this is a game, and like him talking to the, he's like, you forgot it was a game, you know? It's your stats and your pay and but it's still just a game. The kids go out there every day and play for free, for nothing, just to play it. And you know, you gotta do that. It has this like common theme with For Love of the Game. That's a great double feature. Anyway, fun Kevin Bacon story. So, okay. We went and saw the Bacon Brothers last weekend.
Yes.
First of all, I don't know if you go to a lot of concerts. If you get a chance, because I imagine they play in LA. If you get a chance to go see the Bacon Brothers, fucking do it.
All right. I'm there.
They're so much fun. They're so much fun. It's my favorite concert that I've been to. Maybe not ever. Eminem was pretty great. But it's up there. I haven't been to a lot of concerts either. So he's sitting there and he's fiddling. Kevin Bacon's fiddling around on his guitar. And he's like, so you all know that I've got this second career, right? And I was acting his second career.
Yeah.
And he says, so what you don't know is that for a lot of the movies I've done, my brother and I have tried to sit down and write a song to get it on the soundtrack of the movie I'm going to be in. Because, you know, that would be big.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's never happened. They roundly get rejected every time we submit something, which is wild to me. He's the star of a lot of movies. And he's like, I have this song. You want to, like, can we put it on the soundtrack? And without fail, the studio's just like, no, no. You know, it's probably not as true. You know, like, I'm sure he didn't submit a song for A Few Good Men or something like that.
Yeah. But
anyway. So he says, in my younger days, and then he goes, well, not that young. But in my younger days, I was in a movie called Beneath Perfection, and we wrote this song called Beneath Perfection, thinking like, it's perfect. They're going to put it on the soundtrack for the movie. We submitted it. It got rejected, but they also changed the name of the movie. So if you watch Tremors, you're not going to hear Beneath Perfection.
That's great.
So fucking great. Good, man.
That's so great. Beneath Perfection. I did not know that's what it was called. That's
me either.
Like, because Tremors is such a great fucking name. Like, Tremors to me is like one of the best B movies of all time. B movie, I saw it like, and I also saw it in the perfect condition. I saw it at a drive-in. Like, that's how good of a movie experience I had with this. Like, and plus, like, look, can we just take a side tangent and like, why don't we have drive-ins anymore? Like, let's bring them back.
Because I've never been to a drive-in. I've never been.
Oh man, I thought the Polks would be like, because it was like by the car and they you could bring food and
they
it was
weren't
like,
a thing. That they, oh, they went like by the time like my dad talks about going, but yeah. there were none or like even close to us by the time it was like we're gonna go see a movie. So we never went. I think there's still one that does double features around Chattanooga, but I think it's a bit of a drive. I don't know if they've closed though. Like I haven't looked. Like I'd love to go do that. Maybe I'll talk to Steph about that. We'll make that one of our nights out because we could just take Ripley. We just hang out in the car.
No, so. Well that's like when during the pandemic, like that's how I saw movies was like because we had a drive-in. I mean, we had to go 30 miles for the drive-in, but we could take Pliskin with us. It was before we had the other two in Pliskin Pass, but like that was some of like seeing movies during the pandemic. Some of my like memories that are ingrained in me, and just like going to see movies in the 80s, like Top Gun. The first time I saw Top Gun was at a shitty drive-in, and like. Mm-hmm. Like the thing about like, you know, those movies is like when somebody clapped, they didn't clap, they fucking honked their horn. So it was like, you know, the end of Top Gun is like all my memories of it are hearing the score, the Harold Faltermeyer score through shitty radios, but also like honking of horns because, you know, dude bros back in the 80s with mustaches were like, fuck yeah, yeah, Tom Cruise. Like just excited, like you know, it was like I just my memories of like some of like the biggest movies of all time from the 80s were in drive-ins, and it's just like let's bring those fucking back. But there are a few that are still out there for out here at least, and they of course, what do they double as during the weekend in the mornings? Swap meets, fucking love swap meets, man.
But yeah, the Bacon Brothers band, it's fucking worth Members. It. But they're so much fun, and like if you can't go see them, they're on Spotify, man. Like, yeah. their music is pretty good. It falls more in the like the country kind of stuff, but
yeah, it's more very
older country, not the new poppy kind of shit.
It's very Waylon Jennings. Like it's like that's the thing that I've noticed about their work is it's very Waylon Jennings from circa like 1970s. Like it's like it is very.
Go ahead. He's got a fun song called "Mile Bronco" that it's a little poppy, but I really really like that song. Look him up. And if you get a chance to go see him, you especially, I think you would have a good time. Just and they play smaller venues, so like it feels a little more intimate than you know seeing like when we saw Willie Nelson, it was in a big stadium. You know, there's thousands of people. So I mean, I could have thrown a rock and hit Kevin Bacon on the stage. So,
all right.
Anyway, it really, really good stuff. Okay. Let's talk about some movies. We both saw two movies. Yes. I saw Naked Gun a few weeks ago. You finally got a chance to go see it. I've talked a little bit about it and I've been dying to hear what did you think?
This movie really needs to make $100 million. It's not going to, which is unfortunate because they just literally dumped this movie. Cause like it take like Jesus Christ. It like takes the concept of a Naked Gun movie and it updates it and modernizes it. Like I didn't think it was going to be possible, but they literally basically made a, like the version of a Naked Gun movie that you would want, including the perfect score. Like it was like they got the guy who does the Mission Impossible scores to do this movie, and there's no difference between his score for the Naked Gun and his score for like a Mission Impossible movie, which makes it all the funnier. Like this movie is like, I don't even understand how they were able to, like this movie is like it does what Hot Fuzz does, which is it takes a plot that would be super serious in any other movie and ups it to a degree that it is ridiculous. Like, that's literally what it does. Like, and like, that's the thing that I find so beautiful about it, is that it literally is an action movie. It's literally an action movie, but it's taken to this point of like ridiculousness, right? Like the coffee shit, like the way that they keep on getting cups of fucking coffee. Like,
it's when he's driving down the highway and the hand just comes into the window and he says, thanks. And yeah, everybody in this movie is just brilliant. Yeah. It's so funny. And it's one of those things where, like, if the joke doesn't land, just wait 5 seconds because there's another joke. Like, everything is a joke. And they don't pause for the laughter, which is great. That it's become such a thing in comedies to, like, not, like, let it breathe for a second and maybe... I attribute it to Family Guy. It's probably not their fault, but it is such a Family Guy thing where it's like, we're just going to like sit in this moment, and like the awkwardness is the funny thing. And I love that this doesn't do that. It's very old school. I love that everybody plays it straight. Like, there is no, we're in on the joke thing. You know, like, everybody does everything with a straight face. Nobody, like, looks at the camera and is like, huh? You know, like, the office kind of thing. It's just, it's all deadpan, basically. You know, just everybody's the straight man. And I don't know. Liam Neeson's fucking fantastic. Pam Anderson, On the film cast, I think it was on, it was on the film cast. They were talking about Pam Anderson and how wonderful she is in this, and lamenting that we lost an entire career because of what she was pigeonholed as, you know, and because of the failure of Barbed Wire, which... You know, it's not really her fault, but it just, you know, it's whatever.
Well, you know, and also, like, you know, that movie had a super troubled production, like, literally got rid of its original director. Like,
and when you're fucking, you're like, we're just going to make Casablanca, but, you know, like, hokey comic, because it's just Casablanca.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird. But none of that's her fault. She's fucking wonderful. The chair bit, like when they first meet. Oh my god!
Yes,
it's pretty hysterical. The one thing I told you that there's a very extended gag in the, like, almost smack dab in the middle of this movie, and it is kind of a reference to the first movie, because I think it's in the first one where Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley go out on a date.
Yes.
But then there's like this whole sequence of them like doing all these things. And then later they're like, wow, what a wonderful day we've had. And it's like, we just spent like a week with them, like, like go on vacation together. And like, it's a nod to that. Like, they do that joke, but it's fucking wild, the journey that it goes on.
Yep.
The snowman shit.
Oh my god. I
was dying.
Like, that shit was hilarious. Like, so unexpected, but done in the, like, this, like, I don't even under, like, I don't.
It's a journey, man. It's a journey from, like, oh, it's cute. They're on a date. Oh, like, we're doing, like, you know the joke. Like, if you've seen the original movies, you know the joke that they're invoking. Like, oh, we're going to do the whole, like, what a wonderful date we had. But then they're sitting around on the floor and there's like witchcraft going on.
Yes.
And it's just, it's all musical. Like there's nobody talking. It's just this musical romantic montage that turns into a, like they build a snowman. And it's like, oh, that's sweet. And then they're doing witchcraft. And then the snowman comes to life. And you're like, they're doing Frosty the Snowman. But then, like, they're in a threesome together. Yes. And then the snowman gets spurned. And then, like, it's just, wild journey, man.
The fucking, the like, the thing that got me that, like, I'm going to have to rewatch it because I was so busy laughing was the fucking... was the fucking, like, the use of the goddamn asthma inhaler as the thing that, like that could kill Frank. Like, hit, yep. Like the snowman just, like get running it out of it. Oh, my God. I nearly, like, this is the plot of a Skinamax movie inside of a fucking, Naked Gun movie. It's so good. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, this movie has a fucking, I swear, like I said, it doesn't sit in anything. It does a few times, but it's such an obscure thing when it does it. Yeah. The TiVo thing is one of extended, like Family Guy-esque, like we're going to milk this thing. It's one of the, like maybe two or three times the movie does this. But the thing about it is TiVo is so obscure at this point.
Yep.
That is a joke for seven people. Like, who, like, who under the age of fucking 30 understands what this man is talking about? I'm 46. I barely understand it because I didn't have TiVo. I was just like, yeah, I'm not doing that. But, like, it's such a weird extended joke. He's like, oh, like you plugged it into the, I see the Ethernet cable. You plugged it, like it's gone. And then he's it's about Buffy. Like he's lost this one season of Buffy. It's fucking so bizarre. But yeah, Liam Neeson, I don't know, man, give this man like all the flowers. He's just down for it. I know that we've seen him do a handful of comedy things in the past. Like he has a good relationship with Seth MacFarlane.
Yes.
And
he's the only funny thing in A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the reason he agreed to do that movie was Seth MacFarlane asked him to do it. He said the only way he'd do it is if he could do it in his accent.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't want to do the American accent. So, I don't know. He's fucking great. Paul Walter Hauser is absolutely hysterical.
So good.
I'm really enjoying this guy's kind of, like, quiet box office run of like the I'm also in this, you know. It's funny. They just I wish it was gonna be more successful. I don't know how much it cost versus how much it's making. I don't know if the studio will consider it a success. Unfortunately comedies we continue to prove comedy doesn't really play that well at movie theaters, which is fucking sad. I think when this hits streaming home video, it's gonna be fucking huge. People are gonna lose their minds about it. I will say this. I think people are it's at least making a little bit of waves because I bought the Naked Gun trilogy on Blu-ray during Prime Day because it was like fucking $12 for all three movies. I was like, okay, I'm just going to get it. And I had put Police Squad. They released Police Squad on Blu-ray as well. I put it in my cart, but it wasn't discounted. I mean, it was $20, but it wasn't on sale. So I was like, oh, I'll go back and get it later. It's sold out. Like you can't get it. You still get it on DVD, but you can't get it on Blu-ray now. Like, now you gotta, like, if you go try to buy the Blu-ray, it's like $60.
Yep.
So, maybe, you know, it's making a little bit of waves because Amazon sold out of the fucking Police Squad Blu-ray. So, we'll see. It's really good, though. I'm glad you enjoyed it. The whole time I was like, I bet Adam's going to laugh his ass off at this.
I did. I literally, it was one of the best experiences I've had in a long time.
And they didn't spoil all the jokes in the trailer. Like, yeah. That was the one I was like, I feel like I've seen too many of the jokes in this. And really, the only thing the trailers get, like, the opening sequence.
Yep.
Which, okay, you know, that's fine. And then the like, where he's test driving the car. I think that's a big spoiler joke in the, it's like, this place is falling apart. Maybe a couple of, like, smaller jokes here and there, or the scene where everybody's talking to their dead father.
But that's at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. Like, it's literally at the beginning of the movie. And, like, I mean, there's so many goddamn jokes, like the toy arm thing.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ. I laughed so hard when I saw that because it starts out as like this, like the weird part about this movie is it is beautifully shot. It's like shot like exactly what you would expect, like this kind of action movie to be shot like. And then it ends with this gag of the fucking toy arm thing. And like it ends exactly the way you expect it to. And it's hilarious. It's kind of like you don't expect it to be this like truly great, you don't expect it to be this truly great like reboot of the of this like thing that's so specific, but because they went so specific with it, it kind of makes it like, because it went so specific with the current era and didn't try to redo everything, it redid things in a big way. Like the whole thing with the montage, right? Like with the love interest and with the partner. But
yeah, it plays in the tropes, but it isn't a it's not like, oh, we're just gonna reference, like that's the other thing that and again, Family Guy's not responsible. Like I get that a lot of movies, specifically like the Wayans Brothers stuff, the scary movie.
Yeah.
Like all of it's like, oh, it's a reference and that's why it's funny. I am of the like a reference to something isn't humor. Like you have to make the comedy. And that's where Family Guy eventually lost me, is like you're just referencing shit and that's not funny. Like it's just not. Being like, oh hey, remember the Kool-Aid Man? That's not funny. Like you have to make an actual joke about it. And that's what they are invoking, like those scenes and like stuff from the past, but it's not just a reference to it. Like there is a whole other joke there.
Yeah.
So,
and again, it's one of those things where I was like, I don't know, man. Like it's really kind of just like, it's kind of perfect in the way that it makes sure that it does what it's supposed to do and be an actual comedy, but also like it's the best kind of comedy for me where it looks as good as it's funny and it tells a story. And it just, it plays on all the levels. It's not just, oh, okay, we're going to be lazy and not do a story here. Like, it's the reason why, like, you know, one of my favorite movies comedies is Airplane, is because Airplane and Top Secret, like, both of them are 1-2 combinations of, like, movies that, like, yeah, they're, like, ridiculous, but they still tell a story. And they just tell that story that would normally be a normal, like, disaster film or a spy movie. And they up it to an nth degree that's so stupid that you can't help but laugh. So, and that's what Naked Gun does. I mean, I love Akiva Schaffer. I love the Lonely Island.
I gotta go by. I gotta go back and watch Popstar. It missed me, and I never got back around to it. But after Chippendale and this, I've got to go back and watch Popstar.
Oh, you owe it to yourself. That's their best movie, to me. Like,
and I love Andy Samberg too.
Yeah.
So, Palm Springs. Palm Springs, great too.
But this one, oh man, like this one and Popstar, like Popstar, I think is funnier to me. Like it's just because it's unrepentantly rated R. And if Naked Gun was rated R, I'm not sure it would hold a candle to it, because I feel like they just get a little bit of an up whenever you do like an R rated comedy. But anywho, report back once you see Popstar. Popstar yeah. never stops stopping, which is a great. It's a great movie, man. I think you're in for a treat.
All right. So the other movie we went and saw, which is also funny, but not Naked Gun funny. Hold on. One more thing about Naked Gun.
Yes.
One more thing. Did you see the popcorn bucket for Naked Gun?
No.
It was a giant beaver.
Oh my God. That is hilarious.
Which is not a joke that's in this movie.
No.
It's a joke from the
first movie. Oh my God.
And the popcorn bucket was a joke from the first movie. It's fucking great. Okay. So I caught up with Nobody. I think I mentioned it last week when we talked.
Yes.
Absolutely enjoyed it. And this week we got to see Nobody too. And I think Nobody too is a better movie. I'm just going to say it off the jump.
Directed by Timo Fatajano, who's a Malaysian director, or an Indonesian director. He's known for hyper violent movies. Like he actually started in horror and then moved over to like these movies that star the guys that are in The Raid. The movies are called Killer, Headshot. He's done a series of horror movies, May the Devil Take You, which are possession movies. He's done three of them. Wildly, like, had no idea that this was in his wheelhouse, that he would make a, like, it's a National Lampoon's Vacation movie by way of John Wick. It's the best way I can describe it.
It's fucking crazy, man. I had such a blast with this movie. So, I do, I went back and listened to an old Slash Film breakdown of the first movie, because I missed the first movie, so I kind of missed the whole everybody's conversation around the first movie.
Yeah.
And they brought up a few things. I'm like, yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, if both of these movies are making statements about like masculinity and what it means to be a man, like it's a little like flawed for sure and outdated, but like also I don't take my like I don't take that from this type of film. Like,
no.
You know, I don't go into fucking, well, I won't say John Wick because I don't watch those. I'm trying to think. I don't watch action movies to tell me what I need to do to be, what it means to be a man.
The Death Wish movies.
Yeah.
I'm not taking
that from these movies.
No.
If you are inherently, there's some, like, if that's what you're going into this movie or coming out of this movie feeling, then I think, and you probably need to go speak to a therapist because there's something wrong there.
Yeah.
Is the movie saying that, like, it very specifically states in both movies, like, this is what you need to do to be a man. Like, I mean, she tells him in the second movie, like, go fix this shit. Like,
yeah.
But it, like, I'm taking the movie on its own terms, and I absolutely have a fucking, just a blast with everything. I love that both movies are kicked off by someone being shitty to his daughter. Although the first movie, it's the bracelet, right? He's got to go get her bracelet. And it was in the house the whole time, which is fucking hysterical. But yeah, this one, like him rightfully losing his shit because some, like, that dude just popped his daughter on the back of the head. I love it, man. I absolutely, it is just so much fun.
It really is. It's like, it's exact. Okay. So like for me, like this is like a throwback to like what we got in August. Like we used to get like August used to be kind of a dumping ground. Like back when we were kids, like there was never a good movie in August, right? Like The Fugitive changed that. And it was like, oh shit, like if we put a good movie out, it'll be a hit. Now it's like hits all the time. But this is kind of like that counter programming of like back in the late 90s or like in the mid 90s, this would have come out in August. Like both of them, like it would have been a hit. And that's kind of like the way it feels. Like it's a vacation movie. So it's like August is the perfect time. Whoa, she agrees with me. because it's like it's about a dude going on. Like I forgot how much I missed the family vacation movie, and this is done with that kind of framework. And literally, all I wanted was I literally wanted them to pay whatever money they needed to Lindsay Buckingham. I mean, they paid for the fucking trailer. Why didn't they have it in the, like, they had such
great... That was a bummer that Holiday Road was not in the trailer, or in the movie.
In the movie.
In the trailer, yeah.
But it's also, like, but it also doubly downs because they have some great needle drops.
Oh, yeah, like, some really, really good ones.
Timo, like, perfect, like, the ending with the Celine Dion song, Jesus fucking Christ. Like
that had me dying, man.
Yeah, I mean, talk about like great fucking needle drops, like perfect, right? And you would not expect it. It's just, it's all around, like, just, it takes the concept of nobody and like, it's a, like, nobody is a family film, like a family drama wrapped around an action film, right?
Yeah.
Because it's about a, like, the first Nobody is about a guy who has to find his pizzazz again. We've seen these fucking movies a million times back in the 90s, right?
Yep.
Like the dad who's lost everything, but then something sparks his change. But this is like more of like, you know, it's an action movie, right? This one is the National Lampoon's version of this, the framework of the guy. It's literally Summer Rental. But instead of John Candy, it's Bob Odenkirk, and instead of like Richard Crenna, it's fucking the shittiest version of Colin Hanks and Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone's in a different movie. Like,
yeah,
it's a coked out performance. I'm not saying she was coked out, but it is just her. Off the rails. That there are parts of this movie where it feels like she's reading dialogue from a different movie. And like, I'm not as a slight, it's just like, holy shit. Like you're playing the bad guy in a Bad Boys film. And we're not in a Bad Boys film,
but it's hilarious that
yeah.
they decided to do that because she is the only competent one. But at the same time, she's just as incompetent and just as, like, my favorite part about Nobody is, like, the series, it's become a thing where everybody underestimates Hutch. And that's the reason why they get fucked up is because they're like, this old fucking man, fuck you. Let's push him around. Like Colin Hanks, when did he become his dad? Like a dirt bud version of his dad.
Yeah, it is wild. Like we're sitting there, and I was like, it's like the bizarro version of Tom Hanks. It's fucking like we rarely, if ever, get to see Tom Hanks be like a just an out and out like horrible human being, like grumpy old man. Sure,
yeah,
horrible human being. Like, and Colin Hanks is just like, here he is looking like his dad from 1983 and being a horrible human being.
Right? Like, okay, so like, why is it in 2025 we got Colin Hanks the asshole and Chet Hanks the good Chet guy? Hanks
the good guy.
like, but also, why did it work perfectly for both of them? And yeah, why are they all both going to get secondary careers? Like, Colin Hanks, if he wants to now, can now like have a career as a piece of shit bad guy.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
Like, in no uncertain terms. And then, like, the same way that we talked about Chet Hanks a couple of months ago, literally, I can't believe it, last decade, a couple of months ago, about how good Chet Hanks was at playing that kind of guy trying to do good, even though he was a shitty human being before. Wow. Like, talk about the Hanks brothers being, like, one of my favorite things to coming out of 2025 that I did not see. And yeah, like literally sitting there laughing my ass off going, why does Chet Hanks have like a pseudo mullet? Why is he playing?
I'm not super like versed in his career, but like I did watch Dexter and he was on that season of Dexter, but yeah, like even playing like a serial killer on Dexter, like he wasn't scumbag person. It was just like, oh, he's a bad guy, but he wasn't. I mean, this is like just dirt bag. Out and out dirt bag.
Yeah, like he really is like the Florida version of Tom Hanks. If he decided that he wanted to sell meth. Like, that's literally what he is. Guys, like, it is hilarious to watch, like, because for a large chunk of it, he is the bad guy. Like, until like, Sharon Stone comes in and sucks the air out of the fucking room, like, he is the bad guy. But also, like, I loved every moment that Sharon Stone was, like, I forgot how much I love Sharon Stone and how much Sharon Stone was a thing. And it's like, now I want the 87 North guys, the guys who did this, who did The Fall Guy, and did the John Wick movies, Violent Night. I have an idea, and I'll throw it at you in a second. But I want them.
Violent Night sequel coming, by the way.
Yes,
didn't talk about that.
Yeah. Yes, which is great. I also have an idea, but go with me. Like 1 second. I want them to bring Sharon Stone and put her into an 87-11 movie now. Like, now that she's got, like, you know, like, now that I've seen, like, oh, she can kind of, she's game, right? Let's put her into one of these, let's produce one, like, you guys have already started to produce these movies in a big way, right? What's to say you couldn't bring Sharon Stone back? I mean, she's, you know, she seems like she, like, I mean, for a woman that's 62 years old, she looks great. Like in the way that like Pamela Anderson at almost 60 looks amazing, right? Like, it's just like, whoa, okay, I wasn't expecting that. But also she looks like she could still kick ass. So why not? So like at the end of watching this movie, I was like, so where do you go from here? And my thing is, I kind of think I want a... So, like, they've done the vacation movie. They've done the family movie. They need to do the holiday movie for Nobody.
Oh, yeah. Nobody. No,
3, Violent Night 2, where Santa Claus meets up with fucking Hutch. Could you fuck with Christopher Lloyd and RZA?
So is it like the old school Marvel thing where like the heroes meet up, they don't realize that they're on the same side, they fight each other, and then they're like, oh shit, like, or they live, you know, it's like, oh shit, we're on the same side, and then they team up and beat up the real bad guy.
Yeah, where his daughter, or his daughter makes a wish. They get into trouble because, like, Violent Night, like, that's what happens is that the little girl makes a wish, right?
Yep.
And she has to, like, like, same thing, like, both Hutch and, like, you know, Hutch and Santa are both disillusioned again for whatever reason. And, I mean, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I would love to, like, that's the kind of wildness, because it's Universal movies, right? And they're produced by the same guys. Why not? Why not make a, like, because it's a Christmas, like, you need, like.
I'm in for this. Like, it would be a wild, like, movie universe that would exist, but, I mean, fuck it. Yeah. Like, let's go, man.
I mean, you already, okay, so, like, you already have
David Harbour and like, on screen together. So
Bob
good.
Bob Odenkirk sharing space with Harbour along with RZA and Christopher Lloyd. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, Christopher Lloyd is like one of the, it's like the cherry on top of this sundae of this movie. Everything they let him do in this fucking movie is like gold, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't know how they were going to use him, because, like, he is such a delight in the first movie because it's so unexpected.
He gets fucking, it's funny, because I finished Wednesday, the four episodes this past week, which I like it better in season one. But yeah,
I do too.
I think they waste Christopher Lloyd in Wednesday. Yeah.
Oh, they absolutely do.
And to go see this in theaters, and, like, he has as much screen time in this movie as he has in the four episodes of Wednesday, but it's used to such a greater advantage. Like, yep. You know who you have, you know what you have, you know what he can do, and it's just great. Like, and it's little things. So him showing up, like, to surprise the kids, and like, I got hamburgers and s'mores. That's what we're having for. Really, he's that, and you don't even get the scene where Hutch calls him and says, "Hey, go get the family and get them the fuck out of there." Yep. But that's what he's there for, and, like, there's this whole subtle thing of how he tells her that's what he's there for, and that shit has gone sideways. Like, it's played so fucking well, and it's like, well, yeah, he's still that good, you know. RZA's great too.
Oh God, RZA.
The sword shit comes out of nowhere. Okay, I understand why RZA has a sword. Why the fuck does that dude have a sword?
Because he's Daniel Bernhardt, the guy who shows up. So that guy, Daniel Bernhardt, is the guy's name. Like, I love that his name is Cartouche in the movie. Yeah. But this guy is in, okay, so, like, he's like the best way I can describe him in the 87 North universe is he shows up in everything that they do, right? He was, so, like, his big story is that he actually gave the two directors of John Wick, David Lidditch and Chad Selesky, he was the guy who actually gave them their first jobs. He was on Bloodsport. Like, this sounds really weird. I'm going to go into a deep dive of this because I love this stuff. He was the star of Bloodsport 2, Daniel Bernhardt. He was the star of Bloodsport 2. And he knew Chad Selesky because they were both martial arts practitioners under Brandon Lee's teacher. And they both knew Brandon Lee. And so he got this job. And he brought Chad along with him to do some of the fight choreography and also star as one of the bad guys because they knew each other. They knew each other's body movements. Chad knew David Lidditch, who's the guy who directed The Fall Guy and Bullet Train. He brought him along, and all he did was did pratfalls. So, like, if Daniel Bernhardt needed somebody to throw, David Lidditch would come in and throw. That one movie, Bloodsport 2, began the whole thing of 87 North because they got paid for it. Daniel Bernhardt kept on doing direct-to-TV movies. And as a payback to him, when they started getting massive movies, they hired him because he was out of work as an actor. He became a stunt performer, which if people know. Yeah. And basically, now that he's in every single one of their movies, Atomic Blonde, John Wick 1, 2, 3, and 4. He dies in those movies, but he shows back up. He's this character actor that they've basically revived his career. And I love it because he's just this dude that gets a small, he's in Violent Night. He's one of the bad guys that David Harbour kills. The reason why they give
him stunts on Deadpool too.
Like, yeah. The reason why he got a sword was because they probably put it into the contract that he needed to show up and he needed to have a fight with RZA. And it's the only reason why he's there.
He was the fight coordinator on the first movie, and he gets to be one of the henchmen or the main henchman in this movie. Like that's a wild fucking story, man.
I know you don't like John Wick, but if you can see the documentary Wick is Pain,
I've heard how great it is.
He is a big part of it. And I love you know that I love the John Wick stuff, but I also love the movie stories behind it. And I've been watching this story evolve for years, and like through interviews, they all like the thing that I love about the two guys, Chad Zelisky and David Liddich, is that they give everybody love. Like they don't just occupy the screen. They share the love of everything, right? And that kind of goes to Nobody, because instead of Bob Odenkirk coming to them and saying, hey, I want to do what he does in Wick, and them saying, no, you can't fucking do it, they're like, okay, it's going to take a couple of years, but if you're willing to commit 2 years to pure training, we can get you there. Rather than telling him no, they said, let's make a movie. And they worked together with him in over three, I think it took them 3 years, because it started with the first season of Better Call Saul. Like Universal came to him and like, we want to make a movie with you. And he goes, well, I kind of want to fucking do an action movie. And they're like, ha 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 ha, no. Let's do a drama. And he's like, no, I really want to do an action movie. And like in 2017, he went to the 87 North guys and were like, I want to do something with you guys. And so they hooked him up with the writer of John Wick. And then he trained for fucking 3 years. Like he started in 2017, and then he so much so that, you know, that he had a heart attack, right?
Yeah.
Like part of the thing was he had pushed himself so hard. Like they said, like, I think it was Chad Zelisky said, the only guy who pushes himself harder than Keanu Reeves was Bob Odenkirk. And so much so that he had to unstep on the gas, because he gave himself literally a heart attack, because his body was just not conditioned for this, like to go from like 0 to 60 when he was like 45 years old. It's this kind of amazing stuff. Like it's not a good movie. Love Hurts is not a good movie. But them still stepping up and going, hey, Kiku Kwan, we want to make a movie for you. Like, you're going to, like, we want to do an action movie with you, because you helped us out back in the day when we were stunt performers and you were an action director. You gave us jobs. So why don't we return the favor and give you all of the things that you need to make an action movie? Like, what the fuck? Like, that's like the kind of good shit that I love about below the line guys that like kind of like the Fall Guy shows, like some of the, like it's always the below the line guys, the guys that are like taking the hits, that are like the good guys, the ones that will, like, good guys and women that'll do anything for you, right? Like, and these movies are like ever present, like reminders of that. Like, Riz is doing his own thing, but when's the last time we've seen him in a big budget movie?
Yeah.
Even though he's a badass and you love him in everything that he does.
Yeah.
You know?
I do still want the RZA, Chris Lloyd, like,
yes. Little side offshoot movie.
Kind of, yeah. I think it would be absolutely fun.
Or a TV show? Could you imagine a TV show?
Oh my God.
Peacock.
Going back to Daniel Bernhard for a second, I pulled up his IMDb. Do you know what his next movie is?
Yes, Deathstalker. to remake a fucking Deathstalker.
Why the fuck would you remake Deathstalker?
Did you see who's playing his little midget friend?
No, I just saw that it was Deathstalker.
So, the guy who's playing his little, like, the voice is Patton Oswalt.
No shit.
Yes. Dude, I am so okay, so, like, that movie's premiering at Fantastic Fest this year, and I have press credentials for it. It's actually, I've already reached out to the studio because I want to see this movie. Because I'm like, like you said, like, I'm like, who the fuck remakes Deathstalker? Who remakes Deathstalker? I don't know, and I need to see this.
And for anybody, the Deathstalker was one of those we talk about, like the blockbuster movies that you find on like the bottom shelf, like
behind.
it was like a 80s fantasy sword and sorcery kind of thing, but it was it Brazilian or like something like that?
Yeah,
Argentinian
It was something. Okay, I'll tell you right now. I think maybe it was German. I actually own the. Of course, I do. You know me. I own the Scream Factory, Shout Factory, double Deathstalker and Deathstalker 2. Let's see here.
Argentinian American sword. Yep. Yeah.
Yep. I have both of them. I have like it's a part one and part two. But did you see the poster? Go look on IMDb and look at the poster. The poster is literally a fucking a death metal or an 80s metal band cover. It's got Daniel Bernhardt with a fucking sword and like flowing long hair.
That's crazy, man. Good for them. Yeah. Odenkirk's great. I wish they gave, I just blanked on her name. Connie Nielsen.
Connie Nielsen.
Yeah, I wish they gave her more to do. Like,
yeah.
I thought after the end of the first one, I was like, oh, they're going to up her role. She's going to be more involved in the second one. And she gets a little bit at the end. Like, you see her eye that gun and like she gets to be the one that saves the day. And that's great. But she still kind of gets short shrift and like left behind. I get you're leaving her with it to protect the kids, but then she just fucks off and leaves the kids.
The wolf is great. The setup and payoff of the wolf.
And then the payoff that they're both arrested. Like, yes. Later in the it's so fucking funny. So funny.
As much as, like, they cut this to the bone, because it's like an hour and 29 minutes. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that there probably was some more fat to the movie, and they just cut it. Especially because his son talks about getting into a fight because they found him. Not that he was beating up bullies, but also, like, there's this whole thing of, like, the son and Connie Nielsen as Becca. They both feel like they've had training, and we don't get really it's not distracting, but when you think about it, it's like, oh, like she has that whole thing of the gun at the Water World or Wally World, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That sets up her whole.
I always thought the implication was that she was also.
Yes.
In, you know, that field. And that's how, what they kind of say it. That's how they met. And she's like, yeah, you were covered with blood. And like, oh, the good old days. And I
do love the fact that she makes this whole thing about you were not good looking. Like Odenkirk is not like, which I
appreciate. He's not a traditionally handsome man. But there's something about him, you know?
No, absolutely. Like it's he has that charisma. Definitely is. He's definitely got Riz, like the kids say. It's like one of those things where it's like there's a lot of gaps, but it doesn't feel like gaps that like are annoying. There's just like, they let you fill in the gaps. Like there's implications in the dialogue that make it go, oh, okay, well, the kid has his own life. And he has his own thing. Like, he's almost like a nobody in training. And they're trying to, like, teach him his ways. But that's not what the movie is about. And they're already going on vacation. And they're already, like, I mean, he has a girlfriend that we, like, which is a whole other thing. Like, because he starts flirting with the girl and that whole like, storyline. But it's all, like, it's not a bad thing. Like, I always feel like sometimes the editing of a film makes things worse when you think about it. But in this movie, because it's a sequel, it almost feels like they're letting you fill in corners, or they already know they're making a third one. And the third one's going to be as such where we're going to get the family that, like, you know, the family that assassinates together is happiest together, kind of like situation. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, man, it's a hell of a fun film. Like, it really is. Like it has no, it, like, kind of like the Naked Gun, it's not trying to be anything more than what it is, which is just a movie that entertains the shit out of you.
Yeah. And it's not change the world cinema, but it's such a, just a throwback. It's just like, I miss shit like this. Like, I enjoyed it. It's a good 3-star movie. I might not think about it until, you know, I see it on streaming or something again. It's not Weapons, you know, it's not going to stay with me, but it was just a good time. Like, they both were, you know, it's just a good time. And, you know, unfortunately, I think part of the problem is that movies are too fucking expensive and you can't afford to just, I mean, when we did just start dating, it was $50 for us to go sit down and watch a fucking movie. 2 tickets, that's $30. Drinking popcorn, like, that's another $20. It's fucking ridiculous. Movies are just too expensive, and that's why, you know, we're not seeing run-of-the-mill, what used to be run-of-the-mill stuff like this. That's why it's not making waves at the box office, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a fucking shame. So, anyway, I don't know what's on tap next week. Certainly more Alien Earth talk. And I may go see Honey Don't. I don't know. I haven't decided.
I haven't decided either, but I think that there's something else. No, that's the following weekend. I want to watch Caught Stealing. Like, that's what I know for sure.
You might have access. I know that there's an early screening Thursday, but I won't be able to go. We're going to see Alice Cooper Thursday.
Oh, damn, dude.
It's Concert fucking Central. The last we've got like a month where it's just like every week we're seeing, because we saw Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson, the Bacon Brothers. Last night we went to Atlanta and saw a band called Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. They're actually Spike and the Gimme Gimmes now, but they used to be called Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. They are a cover band, but they're a punk cover band. They only do like punk versions of like weird obscure shit, so, or not obscure, but like shit that you wouldn't hear covered in a punk song. Like they did, they covered my favorite part of last night, because, you know, I haven't talked about Ryan this episode. Ryan was a huge Paula Abdul fan, and I turned Ryan on to this band, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, because we both love weird covers. And so last night they broke out into a cover of Straight Up, and it was fucking just bliss, man. Like, the only thing that would have been better was if he was there with me to watch it.
Man,
it was fucking great. Look them up on Spotify, they're great. And it's, every song's quick. Like, every song is less. That, I swear to God, they did 30 fucking songs. They played for an hour and did 30 songs. Like, it's very just punk. Like, we're just going through this. But yeah, went and saw them. Thursday, we're going to see Alice Cooper. And then next Saturday, we're going, Saturday night, we're going to see Billy Bob Thornton. So,
oh, wow. Okay. You guys definitely have like a full pack schedule.
Yeah. More coming. We might go see the Bacon Brothers again in a few months. They're playing at the Grand Ole Opry. Or the Ryman, as I guess you're supposed to call it now. I guess calling it the Grand Ole Opry is out of favor because of whatever, but it's the Grand Ole Opry. Okay. Yeah, thinking about that, I think we are going to go see Travis Tritt because he's playing in town and it's pretty reasonable. And I like a few Travis Tritt songs. So, but anyway, yeah, all that to say, doing a lot of concerts. But there is a preview screening of Caught Stealing. I saw it's here Thursday, and then we'll open wide the next Friday. But like I said, we're busy Thursday. So, so you might have early access to it.
I have one on Saturday, the 23rd.
Ah, okay. So, well, still.
I might go see it on Saturday. It's a Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, no, I mean, we'll figure it out. I mean, there's bound to be a bunch of, stuff that we can definitely talk about. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Well, we can definitely talk. We can definitely talk about the big screen experience of that then.
Yeah. Anniversary screening. Haven't seen it on the big screen since I was a kid. So,
nice.
Yeah. 35th anniversary. We're fucking old. Adam. Old.
I know.
Anyway, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where I've got a ton of 4K reviews coming out and are out right now. I won't be starting Fantastic Fest coverage. Like, I know that I mentioned that, but that won't be starting until the end of September. So we still have time for that. But there's a lot of 4K reviews that I've got going on right now. It's a good time to, if you're collecting 4Ks, it's a good time to be around, especially if you like the catalog titles. So yeah, check that stuff out, movieowl.com.
All right, and we'll be back next week talking about I guess you'll find out then.
Yes. Number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but from where they all sold out, see it all together if you with me now.